at, it's Tuesday, February the 17th at 6 p.m. I'll call us to order and have a roll call, please.
Kathy Egan here.
Steve Martinez present.
Greg Jones present.
Karen Ward here.
Let the record reflect that all the councilors and the mayor is in presence. And it's time for the Pledge of Allegiance, and I'd ask Gloria to lead us.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Amen.
At this time, I will declare the public hearing open and turn to our staff for the presentation.
Okay. Well, thanks everybody for coming out tonight. And I turned the lights down just a little so you could see this better. Secondly, we did turn those chairs there. So, you know, you have to decide if you want to look at the mayor or look at the presentation.
I know you'll make the right decision.
Yeah, presentation.
That's an easy choice.
So what we plan on doing is John with FCS Group is going to kind of give you the abbreviated version of what some of you saw a couple weeks ago when we were here. Two or three weeks ago, we had the Planning Commission, we had the Public Works Committee, and the Economic Development Group led, plus the council and whoever else showed up. And we had a four-hour session that gets into more detail. This is not something you can learn in you know, 15 or 20 minutes. So it's complicated. But we did a four-hour session. We decided to go ahead since then a little bit to split the SDCs off because it's too complicated when you're trying to do sewer and water rates and then SDCs, which are system development charges for new construction. Plus, we have an update coming that will give us an idea of what we really need in that and capital improvements for the future, and that's what system development charges are based on. Those charges are what do you need to make the lines bigger, you know, for growth. And since the numbers we have are 6, 7, 8 years old, plus with a different engineer, different time, the districts own the districts, and we decided to have that updated so that John and his company can then put in those numbers based on updated stuff. So the plan is now we're going to do the monthly water sewer rates, then we'll come back in the fall, winter, and work on SDCs effective for next July 1, or next, well, sometimes next year. So that's where we are. So it did get split up, and that's why we're moving this forward. Our plan is to hear from you tonight, then we'll have another hearing when we have the ordinances before us in about 6 weeks. But we need to draft the ordinances, and we need to know where to head to get those drafted. And that's what we're here for. So if the council gives staff direction to not move forward or to go a certain way, that's the direction that John and I and our attorney will go. And then we will have in April, actually, a public hearing. And these would be effective July 1 if there is a change. Is that understood for everyone? Okay. So tonight from the council, what you need to do is, this is kind of a public hearing. We'll have one that's formal also before when we have the ordinances. So tonight's a public hearing, but you want to hear from people. We want to answer questions. Dig into this and let people get educated. You know, you get educated, ask the tough questions, ask whatever you need to be asked. So then as we close the hearing, we need to know, what do you want us to do? We could do nothing, which would obviously not be very smart. We could keep the systems we have and just look at rates, or we could make the move toward flow-based type on sewers and so on. So those are the kind of things to be thinking about. We do need that direction tonight. So okay. Thinking in your mind. Okay? Everyone clear on that?
Yep.
I can't see Stu, so I'm assuming it's yes. All right. Then, John.
Thank you, Rick. Well, as Rick said, I'm John Gilarducci with FCS Group. We're a rate and financial firm, an independent firm. We're not engineers. We're finance folks. And FCS Group's been in business since 1988. I've been there since 1991, so we've been doing this for a while. The way that we've set up the workshop, and we'll try to get through this material quickly so we can get to your questions.
There's a handout back there for anyone that didn't get it. It has everything on here, too.
Everything printed. I'll give you a little bit of history and background on the water and sewer utilities, and then talk about rate basics, what our goals are when we're doing a rate study. And then we'll get into the first major landmark of a study like this, and that's the revenue requirements. So I'll go through the revenue requirements results for each of the two services. I'll define those terms as we go to. And then we'll talk about the actual rate structures and how the rates are designed to recover the revenue that's needed to keep those services running smoothly. So utility history and background. First of all, the sewer district, this one's not on there, but as near as we can figure, the sewer district was formed before 1990, back in the late 80s.
88.
The water district was created in 2003. There was a major sewer expansion in 2004, and then we had the incorporation of Lapine in 2007. The rate structures were updated in 2009 and 10 to the rate structures you have today, and we'll talk about those specifically later. The sewer district then had its most recent increase in 2010. We'll show you the history of increases in a minute. And then in 2012, the city of Lapine assumed both the water and sewer districts so that these are now city utilities, municipal utilities. Here's what the rate history looks like on the water side. Not necessarily something to brag about. There have been no rate increases since July of 2003. So that flat line is the typical water bill since 2003. The dotted line is inflation over that same period. So you know that costs have increased over that period. The water rates have remained at a really low level, or at least they haven't been increased. The sewer rates have increased over time. There have been several increases in 2004, 6, 8, and 11. So again, that dotted line is inflation, and you can see the sewer rates since 2004, the last 10 years, have kept pace somewhat. They're below what would have been inflationary increases at this point. And one of the things we'll talk about, some of the needs for the sewer system includes some major capital projects that cost some significant money, and we'll look at that in a minute. So when we do a rate study like this one, there are a few things that we strive to do, and there are also a number of objectives that any city we work with will have. First of all, we want to make sure that the rates are set at a level that it generates enough revenue to keep the utilities financially healthy over time, so that they're meeting all their financial obligations. We can only charge in the rates for the cost of services provided. You can't make a profit with water or sewer rates. You can't move money into the general fund or anything like that. These are self-sustaining businesses within the city government that recover only their costs of service in the rates. We try to structure rates so that those costs are recovered equitably from the customers who are paying rates. And then there are objectives like conservation incentives. Do we want to try and reward people who conserve water and are careful about their water use? You can structure rates to do that. You want the revenue to be relatively stable, so you know you're going to be able to meet your expenses on a year-to-year basis. And then we want to make sure that you're able to do things like replace the system as it deteriorates over time, that you have adequate cash cushions, These have to do with minimum fund balances and fiscal policy, so you just want to make sure you're doing smart things with the money so that you're, again, financially healthy and sound over time. So when there are two major types of costs in any utility, and they're very important to that first step, the revenue requirement. The first one is operating costs. We know that the rates have to be enough to cover staffing costs, costs of repair and maintenance in the field. There's some administration that has to be recovered in those costs. Those are regular, predictable, ongoing costs from year to year. They're in the operating budget. We also have capital costs. These occur much less frequently, and they're not steady over time. You'll go for a few years with very few capital costs, and then you have to build some major project that might cost a lot of money. And so you see those are represented by the gray bars here. Operating costs here increase steadily over time, unfortunately, usually. And then capital costs, you know, erratic. So we have to plan for those types of costs and upgrades. This is what the actual analytical framework looks like. So I mentioned the first major landmark there, the revenue requirement. And the rate revenue requirement is the analysis of how much money do we need from rates to meet all the financial obligations of the utility. So if it's the water utility, we want to know, okay, how much do we need from rates to meet our operating budget, our fiscal policies that are going to keep the utility healthy over time, and then the capital project costs that end up in the rates. Some of these capital project costs will be recovered in the system development charge, as Rick mentioned, but some of them have to come from the rate base and they end up in that revenue requirement. So that tells us, again, how much money we need from rates every year. After we have that number, then we get into the second major step, which is how do you design the rates to recover those costs from your customers. Right now, we'll talk about the rate structures. They have this EDU concept, and we'll talk about a different approach that results in a fixed portion to the rates and a volume portion to the rates. So this has to do with the size of the pie, and this has to do with how we slice the pie among the different customers in La Pine. So one of the things that we do, we build a couple of big spreadsheet models to try and forecast out. We go 10 years plus in these in the spreadsheet models, all the way out to 2033. Once you get beyond 6 or 7 years, the forecasts don't mean a whole lot. They tell us what's coming in a very general level. We're assuming growth at a little less than 1% per year, and that's 10 equivalent dwelling units per year. And that's been, we feel pretty good about that. And looking at recent history, it would have been a lot more robust if we were doing this 10 years ago, but we all know what's happened since then. We have the fiscal year 2015 budget as the basis of our forecast. That has been, for both water and sewer, scrutinized by city staff and actually reduced for projections in fiscal year 2016 and beyond. So that's a pretty tight forecast. We build in inflation. We build in both inflation on operations and on capital costs based on history. So we have all these factors built in to our forecasts over years. So we could try to, I guess the one thing we know for sure is that it's not going to be what we forecast, but we do try to be as close as possible. Okay, so moving into the water results. I mentioned that capital projects are a big part of the water and sewer forecasts. You see there are three major capital projects for water in the next 10 years. There's a reservoir project, a line extension, and a project on Russell Road, totaling about $1.75 million. What this pie chart shows is where that money's going to come from by our forecast. A portion of it will be from system development charges. At 10 EDUs a year of growth, unfortunately, you can't accumulate enough money fast enough to do more than that amount in SDCs. The city will have accumulated cash if it follows this rate strategy, and then there will also be debt. That's revenue bond proceeds, basically taking out a loan to repay over a 20-year period to fund those projects. It does make sense on a few different levels to at least use debt financing for part of the project costs, because these projects are going to last 20, 30, 50 years, and so it makes sense to spread those costs out over time, at least to some extent. If you were to cash fund all of it, that would fall all on the backs of existing ratepayers, and those projects are going to, as I mentioned, serve a lot of future users. So this is what the resulting water forecast looks like. Basically, with a modest debt issue in 2018, and operating costs, as you see, that's the operating costs are the lower gray bar. The orange bar here is existing debt service, and then this, I don't know what that is, tan. That's new debt service. So at existing rates, you see that the expenditures will exceed the revenues. With these rate increases, you're able to keep the utility in a sound financial position. Good news, at least comparatively speaking. Those are basically inflationary increases, 3% a year for the planning period. This is just a quick screenshot of a summary table from the model, so you can see if you want to get into the details, we can. Current water rate revenues are shown here. That's a little over $530,000 a year. At the end of 2020, after these increases and growth, revenues are expected to be about $640,000, just to give you an example of how those revenues will increase over time. You see operating expenses here, existing debt service here, and the new debt service line here. The average water bill is shown down at the bottom of the chart, of the table. So going from 31.34 to 32.28 in the first year. So these increases are about $1 a month on a typical water bill over the course of that planning period. So the capital forecast for sewer looks a lot different. One of the things you'll notice right off the bat, the sum total of capital projects, a little over $12.1 million as opposed to $1.7 million for the water service. Some major capital projects, lift station upgrades, collection system improvements, treatment upgrades, and you see the costs listed here. A lot more of a reliance on debt, just because the numbers are so big, you have to finance more of the projects, but the city would still be able to generate substantial amount of cash to help fund those projects, SDCs here. The resulting rate increases, as you can imagine, more substantial. Again, we've got new debt and coverage, which is additional rates that you have to raise to meet that debt service, are shown here. And you can see, so the first debt issue would be in 2020, and then a second debt issue in 2024. And the increases required to get up this hill, basically, And we've smoothed them out as much as possible in order to reduce rate shock when you get to these debt issues. So you see a series of 10% increases, five of them, followed by four 18% increases, and then back down to single digit increases. So these are obviously substantial increases. The numbers are shown here. The average sewer bill would go from $24, which you'll see in our comparables is a very low sewer rate. I know that's small consolation, but that average bill would go up to, in 2020, $38.65, and then it would be up over $50 by 2022 per month. Believe it or not, we're seeing rates in that range becoming commonplace for wastewater, particularly because regulatory requirements are such that in smaller sized communities like Lapine, you got to build treatment facilities, and there's just a smaller customer base to spread those costs around makes it difficult. So those were the revenue requirement results for both water and sewer. Now, this now we'll shift and talk about rate structures, how those costs would be recovered from customers. So the existing water rate structure in Lapine, you have a fixed charge and a volume charge. The fixed charge is imposed per equivalent dwelling unit. So every residence is one EDU, one equivalent dwelling unit. And then for commercial customers, depending on the type of business, the size of business, if it's a restaurant, the number of seats, there are a number of different factors that go into it. A commercial establishment is assigned a number of equivalent dwelling units. And so they pay $27.34 per equivalent dwelling unit. The residence pays that $27.34 regardless of its size. And then the volume charge, the first 3,600 gallons of water use per EDU are included in the fixed charge, and that is about what a single family residence in Lapine uses in the winter, 3,600 gallons per month. After that 3,600 gallons per EDU in the allowance, then you're billed at $2 per 1,000 gallons of actual metered water use. So we've, after a lot of discussion and consideration, we're proposing a change in rate structure, and we will be proposing changes to the sewer rate structure as well. But for water, what we're proposing is that instead of this EDU concept that assigns a number of equivalent dwelling units to commercial establishments, that we instead charge a fixed rate that's based on the size of the meter. So if it is a 5/8 by 3/4 inch meter, they would pay the smallest fixed charge. 1 inch, 2 inch meters would pay successively higher fixed charges because of the capacity of those meters to run a whole lot more water through. And you get away from assigning them based on land use and characteristics of the building. It's all about how much water they can pull through that meter. So that would be the fixed charge. We're proposing for the volume charge that, and for both residential and commercial, that there no longer be an allowance. So you pay for every bit of water that's used under this structure. What you'll see for residences is we're proposing that the first amount of water, and there'll be three different prices for water. As you use more, the price goes up. I'll show you in just a minute. But that first price will be very low. So if you conserve water, you're rewarded by a very low rate, and then as you use more, you'll pay a higher price for that water. So that promotes water conservation. Larger water users pay more under a structure like that. For commercial, all usage would be billed at the same rate. Commercial properties don't tend to respond to incentives like residences do. That's where most of the discretionary water use is. It's in the residential customer class. So, let me show. So this is what it would look like. You see the fixed charges for residential and commercial, they're the same. The reason we've got them in two columns is to show the different volume rates. But as the meter size goes up, 5/8 by 3/4 inch meters would pay $28.90 per month. If you have a 1 inch meter, you pay $72.24 a month, and that's based on the flow capacity of that meter. And then so on up the meter size. Now there aren't any residential meters larger than 2 inch. I think we discovered that last time. And there's only a handful of commercial customers 2 inch or above. So not many customers would be paying rates at these levels. For the usage charges, a single family residence would pay for 0 to 3,600 gallons $1.20, so that's quite a bit less than the current usage rate per 1,000. For usage 3,600 to 7,200, and 7,200 is about a summer average usage for a single family residence. So that rate would be $1.80 a 1,000, that's still less than the current volume rate. And then at usage over 7,200 gallons, $3 per 1,000 gallons. For commercial customers, in addition to that fixed rate, $2.50 per 1,000 gallons. So some of the, you see pros and cons listed on the right here. One of the things that a rate structure like this does is it rewards conservation. It provides a sort of a lifeline rate for folks who can conserve water. They benefit from a much lower rate. It promotes efficient use of water. We believe it is more fair because you've got fixed charge based on an actual measure of water potential demand by basing it on the size of the meter. One of the cons is the reliance on the volume revenue will go up under this structure. You're still well within industry guidelines, though this is still a real solid rate structure in terms of revenue stability. One of the things we looked at is how the water bill would look against that. The state has an affordability index. If the rates get high enough that they are over 1.5% of the median household income, then sometimes that can move you up in terms of getting grant funding. So it does look like the water rates may exceed the affordability threshold in 2018. That would happen regardless of the rate structure change. And in part, that's because the median household income currently in La Pine, we found, is at about $30,000 a year. So that 1.5%, you're not that far off from it right now for water. So there are some sample bills, and these are based on real customers, but we tried to create just a few scenarios. So there are four different single family residences shown here with different monthly usages. And then under the current rates, here's what the bills would be. With the 3% increase across the board to those rates, here's what those bills would be. And then under the proposed rate structure, here's what the bills would be. So because of the allowance, removal of the allowance, the rates would go up for all the single-family residential customers, but you see it's a much smaller impact for those customers who don't use a lot of water. The larger beneficiaries, because of the EBU structure and how it works against commercial customers right now, some of the folks who benefit are larger commercial customers in this scenario who are paying, frankly, too much in their fixed charges right now. So hopefully that gives you an idea of how some of these changes would impact individual customer types. For sewer, the city's existing rate structure is shown here. Pretty straightforward. There's no volume charge. Your monthly charges are entirely based on the number of equivalent dwelling units. For a single family residence, everybody's got one. That's $24. And then for commercial properties, $27 per EDU. So again, and the number of EDUs is assigned depending on the type of business and the characteristics of that business. So as I mentioned, we're also proposing a rate structure change for sewer, and that would be a fixed charge similar to water that escalates with the size of the meter, and then two different types of usage charges. For single family residences, a usage charge per 1,000 gallons of winter average water usage. We don't want to charge residences for summer water use because summer water use doesn't end up in the sewer system. But if we base it on winter water use, then we're pretty confident that the water that's being used in the winter is ending up in the sewer system. And then the way these work, and these are becoming an industry standard, if you will, the billing system just tracks your usage from, let's see, it's November, December, January, February. And then your average usage determines your bill for the entire next year. Again, large water users would pay more, but those who do conserve are rewarded. For commercial customers, because they don't tend to use, generally commercial customers' water use year-round ends up in the sewer system. They're not doing the kind of watering of lawns that residential customers are. So they would pay a rate per 1,000 gallons of all their water usage. Maybe sounds complicated, but billing systems are doing this routinely now. So this is the way that rate structure would look. The important column here is the one on the right. This shows the fixed charges by the size of the meter, 1903. For 5/8 and 3/4 inch meters, that's what most of the single family residences in the city have, and higher as the meter gets larger. For single family residences, $3 per 1,000 gallons of winter average water use. So if your winter average is 4,000 gallons, which would be reasonable, you're going to pay four times that $3, or $12 plus the 19, for the entire year after that winter measurement. For commercial, $5.55 per 1,000 gallons of water usage throughout the year. So again, similar to the water rate structure change, this promotes efficient use, rewards conservation. It is still a reasonably stable rate structure at that 40-60 split, believe it or not. And for one thing, even though winter water usage is usage-based, it's very predictable because you know what the winter averages are that you're billing people for that point here. Again, we looked at the affordability index, and it looks like rates, and this is holding the median household income constant, but the sewer rates would reach the affordability index after 2019. Sample bills shown here. For some of the, and again, we've made up residential customers with different usage levels. This is, in this case, this is their winter average usage. So the monthly bills for those lower users, they're benefited by a lower rate than the existing rate structure plus the 10% for fiscal year 2016, which was the revenue requirement result. Sorry, that 10% didn't show up there. So they actually do well. And then you can see a high residential winter average usage, which is more like a summer average use for a typical customer, would see a pretty significant increase. And then commercial customers, similar to water, because of the change away from that EDU structure to what we believe is a more equitable structure, some of them would benefit under this change. I know, a lot of material. So one thing that, every system is different. So I'm always nervous about showing rate comparisons because everybody's needs are different, everybody's financial situations are different, but I know it's something that would be of interest. So these are a number of different neighboring and similar communities and what their water bills are for a typical single-family residence. And you can see the Pines existing under the existing water rates. The typical bill is a little over $30 a month. In 2016, after all the changes proposed, that same user would pay about $36 a month. For sewer, I mentioned that the rates were low. At $24, that's the existing rate. After that 10% increase and the rate structure change, the typical single-family residence would pay almost $30 a month, still pretty middle of the pack compared to your neighbors and comparables. We did combine them just to see how that looks, both of them together on a monthly bill, and the combined monthly bill would go from about $55 a month to about $66, and you can see how that compares to your neighbors. You see Myrtle Creek up here, kind of an outlier. That's Bend, Madras, Prineville, Sutherland. Let's see, Sisters is here. You can't see it from there. So there you go. Questions? And I'm happy to go over any of this again or whatever you need.
This is your chance to, we've got to wake you back up and after all those numbers.
So are you proposing that going forward that they would change the rates every given year? Or would they do it every couple years? I mean, how would that look?
What we are proposing is that at least for the next several years, the rates follow this pattern for water. So it would be a series of 3% increases each year. The rate structure change would happen once, and then it would be the percentage increase applied to that rate structure each year.
So you would do some kind of form of policy, and then instead of doing that paperwork every year, it would be included in.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So you establish that by ordinance once. You know, this is the fixed rate, this is the volume rate. The allowance would be removed, and then that would apply in 2016. The rates that I just showed you for water. And then next year, all you'd have to do is raise each of those rates by 3%, and you don't recalculate the fixed and variable.
I think my recommendation will probably be something like a 3 to a 5 year that we would, like water, it's pretty constant. So it's not, we don't borrowing as much in water and there's smaller increases. So whether you do it for 3 or 4 years, you know, it's not too big of a difference. Go to the sewer one.
Yeah, we do sewer.
You'll notice 10, so I'm thinking more of a 3 year, because the problem is the reason when it really shoots up and you start to get those 18s, that's all dependent. Scott, we were just figuring it out. If you go to the capital list on sewer, of that 12 million, about 9 million is dealing with moving the sewer plant and the lagoons east. So people like Mr. Huddle, who have followed these things, that is involving, see, of that 12, John, 9 of it is moving the lagoons east, which is all part of shallow groundwater. Mm-hmm. And so one of the questions we're asking, and that's why I wouldn't recommend we go on beyond about 3 years, is we're asking a different consultant, not the company that the district's used. We want a second opinion, because it's like you're going in for open heart surgery. You better get a second opinion. Mm-hmm. If 9 of that 12 is moving east, we need to know more about it. Why are we moving? Who's making this move, if anyone? And then what can you do it for less? Because if our current plant functions, has excess capacity, and truly is working pretty good, how can you justify spending $9 million? If you take the $9 million out of that, those 18% things come way, way down. And so we, in October, will have an updated cost of the capital plan of what they think we need, what it would cost to go east, and when do we have to, based on our growth, how much capacity is in our current plant. So if there's a decade or more of capacity, and nobody's making us move east, there's no order from the DEQ right now. There's no order from anyone. So why do it if we have capacity? We're not going to bulldoze our capacity just to go do it. So that's why I think the sewer, we don't want to go too far out. So don't look at those 18s, because those big numbers are all because you're borrowing $9 million to go east. And we don't know if that's needed.
And one of the things that struck me when you compared sewer rates is most of those municipalities are using a traditional sewer, I would assume, where Lapine is using an effluent only. So they're piping the effluent, which is a lot cheaper to run, which makes me wonder, do you have engineering figures right now that you're working on that are maybe tied more closely to a traditional sewer?
No, they were, what's his name?
HGE,
he did the sewer system. He knows the sewer system. He did it based on this system.
Yeah. So that should be cheaper.
Well, you know, really, John, the difference really is just because we're flat. The fact is,
right,
in a crude, I will be careful if I can word these correctly, but you understand it. The same thing going through a traditional pipe and bend.
Right.
Here, the difference is the liquids go to plant in a smaller pipe, but the same solids are the same, and they're just in a tank. We go pump them out.
So
we go dump them in the sewer lagoon.
Uh-oh.
So instead of coming through a pipe, they're just simply hauled there, and you could argue...
Which is cheaper.
Well, and I don't know that,
yeah,
but this is the system that they designed in 1988. So let's just call it an even. We haul it to the plant to be treated, but it wouldn't matter how it got there.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
Yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Good question, though, because when I came here, I'd never heard of a system like this. But it works.
But those comparables, I mean, you're right. They're, by definition, they're all apples and oranges. I mean, Ben's a good example. The system's totally different.
It makes you wonder how old, but now you look at Klamath Falls, I know they've got some infrastructure problems in other areas. So, are some of those, what you say, they may be rotten apples far as infrastructure.
And we don't know what's ahead, mm-hmm, which I think is your point. For a lot of these, we know Ben's rates are going up.
They're going to go way up.
And we know that a number of these communities will go up. We don't know how much. So, you know, we're comparing a proposed 2016 rate against current rates for these
these other locations, and we don't know if they're going to stay at those levels.
Yeah.
We probably, they probably won't.
How would the fees be figured for those properties that still have private wells for irrigation? Because we do have those.
They're not connected?
It's not. Well, they just need their house. It doesn't affect any because they just have a domestic meter.
They pay for the domestic meter. Right.
Right, but then you don't have, you know, you're going to make an adjustment for the overall rate in the wintertime because people aren't using irrigation water. And a lot of people aren't anyway.
Right. So it should work out to the same thing because you're only going to be paying attention to that domestic meter during the winter when they're not irrigating anyway. So where I do think you'll have to make explicit adjustments are for folks who aren't living here in the winter. Mm-hmm. And the way that most places deal with that is they assign residences the system winter average usage if you've got folks with zero because they're not living here in those winter months.
Any other questions? Really, now's the opportunity. I find it very, well put together and the information is all there, but if you can think of anything like John has, let's hear it.
So we're, you know, I think it's important to remember that we're doing two things. One is we're adjusting rates. So it's a little double
percentage.
We're doing a percentage increase because that is how it all calculates out. But secondly, we're changing the EDU, getting rid of this EDU system. And an EDU system, equivalent dwelling unit, I think people get confused because I know if I was sitting there, I would be. So just to go over it, if you have a house, a single family house is an EDU. That's an average house. And, you know, one house has six kids and one has none, but they're all equal. But when you got to commercial, and there's actually a book, I think, that gives a kind of a comparison. So what would happen in a commercial, they would assign it, because obviously it's more than a house. And it was just, if it was a restaurant and you had 10 chairs, you were an EDU. If you had 50 chairs, you were 5 EDUs. So you would take that minimum of just for round figures, because since it's called $25, if I had 5 EDUs, my minimum would be $125. 5 times the 25. It has nothing to do with how much water you use. So I've used as an example of Gordy, when he was around, came, and he's the one who first said to me when I was here in 2010, said, Rick, my sewer bills are way higher than anywhere if I compare it. And right, it just write him off. I went and started looking at it. And I started researching and thought, there is a huge difference. And what really stands out is like one of the strip malls where all you have is a toilet in the back and they're little 1,000-foot units. Under the system in Lapine, each one is charged an EDU. So if I have 10 of them in a row, it's 10 times the rate. So I pay 10 of them, that's $250. But they wouldn't use as much water as one house. Because the volume they used, each one of those wasn't 500 gallons in a month. All they did was flush a toilet. And so he was right. Then I got complaints from the RV park out at Wickia, and they called me numerous times. And I mean, like 3 or 4 times they were fighting with me, screaming at me, yelling at me. He said, it's the highest sewer rates that they've ever paid, and water rates. And again, they have 52 spaces. They paid 25 EDUs. It's under the ordinance, it was 2 for 1. Every 2 units is 1 EDU. So in the winter, you drive by tomorrow, how many of those spaces are being used?
8.
You're about right. So he is paying 25 times the minimum of, just again, I'm using around here, $25. For sewer. He has 8 units in there. You do the math. Under this system, he may pay $200 or $300, depending on his pipe size, But then it's all volume. His volume might not even be 3,000 or 4,000 gallons. So it's a much fairer system. Now, if you happen to be someone that was only getting charged 2 EDUs, but I used a ton of water, you're going to see it go up more. So this is really a fair system where you're paying for what you use. So there's going to be people who will be mad at the council and those that will be happy. But you can't argue it is, in fact, if you use a gallon, you pay for a gallon. And if you send a gallon down the drain in January, you pay to send it down the drain. This will be an equalizing, making it fair. Those who had it one way will be happy, and those who have the other way won't. And what you will find is, generically, is the larger users or people with more EDUs will find the least, well, many will find actually a decrease in their water and sewer bills. Anyone, like a motel, they're 2-for-1. So you got 50 rooms down at the motel, he pays 25. He sits there with 3 rooms rented in the middle of the winter. See, all those kind of people will see probably a reduction. And
so it's easier to understand.
Huh?
So it's easier to understand too for everybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, it just makes more sense.
So it's a good system. John, you've been, Mark, most people have kind of moving or have moved already to this.
It is much more accepted approach, and I think the industry is trending toward the two approaches, especially for water. I mean, you
yeah.
almost universally see that meter size approach in the fixed charges for water with a volume rate, and likewise for sewer. So yeah.
I think, you know, when rates were less, that would maybe be another thing. You know, if you only paid 10 or 15 bucks a month, it didn't matter as much if, to a degree, you subsidized someone or vice versa. But when you start getting into $30, $40, $50 rates, people's generosity starts to shrink. And they only want to pay for what they use. And, you know, Ben, you just worked there, but they're even getting into, we didn't do that. Commercial has a little different rate, but strength of what goes down, because it costs more to treat, and not as much in our system, but strength of, if you have a brewery or anything that puts down greasy, icky stuff, in most cities, slowly, they're starting to have then a multiplier based on what you put down a sewer. Because if you're running a big industry that's putting heavy metals and things into the water, that really impacts the operation of the plant. Correct?
Absolutely. Yeah, and so if they have a more complex customer base, where they have all the breweries, they have some really high strength effluent customers. You don't really have that in Lapine, so we don't think that additional complexity makes sense here at this point. But I mean, yeah, you're absolutely right. It does cost more to treat those higher strength effluent customers. The one other thing, I mean, is in some ways, because the rates still are pretty low right now, this is the perfect time to change the structure. And because you do have that equity shift where you have, I hate to call them winners and losers, but you kind of do. And then that part will be fixed. And then as you go on, and the rates unfortunately would have to go up, hopefully not as much as we're showing for sewer if those capital changes are made, then you don't see customers being unfairly charged as that does happen over time.
What's your capacity for your lagoon or your sewer system right now?
250,000 gallons a day.
What percentage are you at it?
40 to 50%.
40 or 50%. And you're talking about 10 units per year growth.
We use that as an estimate.
Right. So it's going to take a while if you're going to reach capacity.
Yes. Yeah, that's our theory.
But if you were to do some of the things you're talking about now, I assume it's cheaper to do it now than it is to wait 10 years down the road.
Well, not if it's a capacity issue, because then you get into, we're charging the people here today.
Right.
You know, that's, you get into that discussion. How far ahead do we, 10 years is maybe you know, but you start getting out further. In other words, if we go put in something that's got 30 years of capacity, and we're charging it to today's ratepayers, you see, and that's the $64,000 question on that kind of thing. So you've got to keep it manageable. The idea is SDCs cover,
right? The SDCs are perfect for something like that because then you have some time to accumulate. You actually accumulate some money from SDCs before you have to build it.
Why are SDCs in Bend so much higher than ours? They're four times what we charge.
I can explain that. Bend didn't prepare financially
for the growth.
In a good growth manner, and they end up spending a lot of money without ever preparing to pay the bill later on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you build a home there, it's $20,000 or more right up front, just for your SDC charge. Mm-hmm. Here it's $5,400 at this point, I believe.
They're
so
also paying,
understood that.
Sorry, they're paying a transportation SDC and a stormwater SDC and a park SDC for the park district there. So they've got all five services in that $20,000. One of the things we'll show you is an updated system development charge for the city of La Pine. That's going to be at a future meeting.
That's why we decided to wait, because SDCs, you know, we want to get good numbers because we need to know what that capital cost is. Because that really drives, those costs will go up, and then what will the council hear if they're too high?
Torches and
especially pitchforks. For industry.
Yeah.
That then you're driving off business.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. See, and that's
the balancing act. Yeah.
So how might the SDC charges look in the future? For example, right now, if as a business, if I go in there and say, I want to add a toilet, let's say, I'm going to pay $5,400. How's that going to look when we go to the new rate structure?
The initial charges we've looked at have been similar to the rates based on meter size. As opposed to
if he doesn't increase, that's a good point, because I don't know the answer to this. Okay, so you know, someone's going to add on a little, but the meter they have still works.
No charge.
See?
Because the potential demand through that meter is the same. And whether you've added the toilet or not, it's all about that the flow capacity of the meter. So under that structure, yeah.
You like that answer.
Yeah.
It's
okay with me.
Well, the only time it would change is if they have to change the size of the meter.
Right.
Then the rates would go up.
Yes.
Right now, it would, if you added a toilet under our system, you would get charged that 50 some hundred bucks because it's just all arbitrary. It's based on the number of toilets, the number of sinks, and the number of chairs.
So an existing home connects to your sewer and right now. What's the connect charge?
$5,700.
For sewer. And water is?
$1,405.
So.
Yes.
We have no transportation SDC yet. Look for that in the future. And then our parks district evidently has never had an SDC. They could, and every other one does, but our parks district does not.
They should.
So. You know, the reason I'm here is, of course, is outside this UGB. What should DEQ manage to get the muscle to pressure you to extend beyond that if Goal 11 exception is approved? What?
You've got one discussion in the room is all
yeah.
I can hear.
Yeah.
You're not going to keep the same rate.
Start that over, the question.
So you're pressured to extend the sewer line outside the urban growth boundary. You're not going to be able to keep that same rate for the folks outside there. Any idea what percentage-wise you might have to increase it?
Well,
you don't have your capital construction costs yet, so that factors in, I know.
Well, that's a hypothetical that, you know, don't go too far down that path, because that I think is that if the city was to go out, and I'm just saying, just you know, you have to think about things. Right. If the city was to go out of the city limits because of the Goal 11 change that is at DEQ,
right?
If that happened, it would only be a couple little places that are literally touching the city. I mean, it would be marginally impacting anything. So as far as the South County from Sun River to Klamath County septic issues, it's not even measurable. But I will say this, that cities do provide sewer services outside city limits, inside urban growth boundaries. And what they usually do is charge a higher rate. They will have an outside city rate. So if we were to go, say someone touching the city and, you know, whatever, and for some reason the council decided and the law let you took them in for just to provide them sewer, in Madras, our sewer rate was 2.5 times for a non-city resident to hook to the sewer. So if your bill was $30 in town, it was 80, 85 out of town.
And would the connect fee be higher too then?
I'm assuming yes, but
the Madras?
The SDC, if you were to do that and let's say make them pay for those improvements, separate SDC for that area. It would need to be cost-based, but it would be substantially higher.
Right. Okay.
Well, if you were to do that, two separate ones, the alternative is...
But I think it's important that the council has not asked or wanted or even contemplated moving outside
the
city limits.
But I need to ask those questions.
Yeah, yeah. I just want to make sure because that's a sensitive topic.
Right.
Are we really only talking about a few places that actually even qualify for that, right? That would actually qualify for that actual potential of doing that, right?
You're going to have to be pretty close to the city. The only places are, what's the trailer park across Huntington?
The little one on the north end of Huntington there. I don't.
What's it called?
Riverview. Yeah, Riverview.
Yeah, and the districts, when you look at their capital facilities plan, it actually has that included. But it does, if you take them away, it doesn't change a pipe size. I mean, there just isn't enough of them, but it's actually in the plan.
So it wouldn't change the pipe size. I mean, you're not having to go to from a six to an eight.
Like I say, that's just right there. But if you get away from that and a couple, there's nothing buttoned up next to the city of any size.
Yeah, so there really isn't any potential for that anyway. It's not like at this point, you know, in the future, who knows what happens, but at this point, there's not really any...
I mean, if you were to go move down Day Road toward the grocery store a mile, the cost
Burgess,
down to Day Road, the cost of that would be a ton. You'd have to have pumping plants and all of those things.
Yeah. So you got to cross a river.
Yeah.
I personally think this is so hypothetical that we, you know, there can be a few questions or ideas around it, but this change to 11 and even how that will wash out, I would like to see us look at what we're looking at and deal with that and cross that bridge whenever. I it's just to me a hypothetical question that is way out there, and I think we've had some great presentation here, and I would urge us to pull ourselves back to this and question.
So I just want to make sure I understand. So what I'm not seeing on here are places like Willow Lane and Evergreen, where there's currently, within the city limits, they're not hooked up to sewer or water yet. Those fees are not included in any of this anywhere to eventually hook them in.
Yeah. Did we pull those out? The Kegel thing, that's what the other people are looking at, what's going to cost. What we're going to do is have John and them throw those new numbers in, and because this is on Excel type stuff, that they can kind of, they know where we are here, and then how does that impact us? We've done some rough looking at that.
For
but
those people
I don't too. Even want you to see it.
Yeah.
It would just cause you to have a sleepless night.
For those people that are currently, you know, they're older, there are a lot of older structures out there. There's a lot of lots that were used for RV purposes, and the wells and the sewage septic need to be updated and things.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm looking at it from a standpoint of a real estate agent where I'm trying to sell a lot in there, and that can't happen. There's no plan currently to update those systems, so they have to go in and update the septic, update the well, do all those things. But people are asking, well, when's the city plan on doing that?
Well, our plan is, if we can get it funded in 5 years, we would serve the Cagle Glenwood. Don't forget Glenwood Acres.
Yeah, Glenwood is part of the Cagle. When he says Cagle,
okay,
he has assured me more than once that Glenwood is part of that.
Yeah.
And so it is.
About 250 houses, more lots than that.
Yeah.
Yeah, just in the Cagle Acres, there's 300.
Yeah. Yeah. So we would serve about 250 more residences, because mostly residences, down there. But what we have found in our preliminary numbers is that without significant number of grants, it's just mathematically, even John, when he looked at them, he was like, whoa.
Yeah.
You know, we would be over there with Myrtle Point or Myrtle Creek.
Myrtle Creek, yeah.
And, you know, that would be an interesting meeting. We can handle these numbers.
Oh, I know, yeah.
So I hear what you're saying is the cost to do business out there is way above, I mean, the cost to, well,
it's the capital of adding the pipes.
It just, the cost that you charge for about wages. Because when Wiki of Junction came on board, it actually was an economic benefit to the districts to add them. It actually was the cost. Yeah, the cost actually was so small to go out there, they made money. The minute they got them hooked online, they were making more money than it cost to put that infrastructure in and go about business.
Well, yeah, because you take there's motels, there's Gordy, but just look, the one RV park, it's 25 EDUs.
Yeah.
That's like over 25 target houses. Yeah. So I can go 100 feet and pick up 25 EDUs. When I go to Cagle, 100 feet, I don't even leave that property open.
Yeah.
It's 200 feet. These are 1 and 2 acre lots.
Yeah.
So the distances, so you're trying to really run a sewer into a rural setting that doesn't have the densities, so you're not having enough people paying, and so that increases the cost. So if we don't get, we're going to have to get 50% grants or better to make it feasible. And then we'll find out if the DEQ and those who run the granting programs, how important this is, because without grants, a significant amount of grants, we'll wait till we get our numbers. But if we use the old numbers, it's pretty tough. So it's so far out of whack that it would be hard to do. Now, you know, there are options of having, and we've talked about this, having a double rate structure where Cagle would pay a rate and the rest of the city would pay another rate. John doesn't like that.
Well, I think that is a true policy question. I've seen that be at times divisive in other communities where you have one group paying a rate that's much higher than others. But that's a policy call. Those numbers, because that customer base is so small and the dollars are so big, you can imagine the rates would be really high in that, at least going by the preliminary numbers.
This is going to be an ongoing issue for the next 20 years.
Yeah.
But can't they start like X number of funds to do one road? I mean, start building something in some sort of, let's say do, railroad, and then just every couple of years do something different. I mean, some place to start instead of bang.
Like a sinking point.
Well, I think he needs to build one road at a time.
Yeah.
There's a lot of issues with that because the main line still has to be big enough for all of it.
Oh, okay.
See, and so then you're front loading it. And the only way we would have a pot to save for Cagle would be if $500 a month of Brian's bill is set aside for Cagle. See, I mean, that's the only way you create a fund is if, and so I'm not sure that would be tough. I think that when you do an area, you got to do an area. You're building a system. We got pumps. It's some of the gravity flows. you know, things run in and then it keeps going over to the grade school area.
It's cheaper by size.
So
basically, buying any lots, building anything out there, doing anything, you could possibly say, you're not going to see sewer and water for 20 years.
No. Well, we will know in the next year, I would say year and a half, we will. Our plan is that we're doing in phases, so we right now have it studied, so we're going to get it, updated costs. We'll have that by October. Then we will decide, the council will decide, do you want to move forward based on what you know then to apply for grants and loans. We will then go to the state and the feds who have grant loan programs, find out what we can do based on all of that, and that's a year process. Then when we get whatever number of loans and grants committed, it'll come back to the council saying, okay, this is the cost, this is how much in loan and grants. We'll rerun the numbers and see what that comes to. And then if that is what the council feels you can stomach or that we'll do, we then would vote to move forward. We then have it final engineered, build it. It is about a five, I give each of those steps about a year, so it's about a 5-year process.
And I would add to that, the council has already directed staff to start preparing and gathering the information for a 3 to 5 year plan. And that's where they're deeply involved, and we see a big piece of it going forward now. And the one later in the year where engineering comes in and tells us about the infrastructure, that will just be another one. And so a lot of things are going on at the same time. I mean, the DEQ is being talked to, and there's other aspects that need to sort of be worked on as they happen. So
we'll be able to jump off about once a year. The council will be able to say, no, right, this is more, you know, and we just kind of keep moving on and out down the road. Now, one good thing for the realtors, we talked about in our realtor meeting, I think, that if we are, as long as we, if we are going to actually start to build the system, the state will allow them to do repairs on the current system. So you don't have to go in and fix your old bad systems. You could do a cheaper fix. You wouldn't have to go to the ATT systems, which can cost a whole bunch of money. So once we decide to move forward, and it's 2 or 3 years to get it built, and someone has a failure, they can do a much cheaper repair. Because we don't want to force people to put a $20,000 ATT system in that is obsolete a year later. But if we haven't decided to move forward and signed an agreement with DEQ, they won't allow that. Because that question has come down here several times for people that say, look, if the sewer's coming, I don't want to spend as much money on a repair.
Right.
But right now, we can't do anything about it because we haven't agreed. And that's actually a DEQ rule. It's good for 5 years after we guarantee there'll be sewer. I can't guarantee there's sewer. Right. Council can't guarantee their sewer.
Yeah. Okay.
So
we have all the numbers.
One other question. When we're talking about the threshold, affordability threshold, and you were mentioning that there, at that point, there may be grants available. Grants to those homeowners?
To the city.
To the city.
To the city. And
how does that help the homeowner that's struggling to pay their bills?
Well, it helps because it doesn't help them individually, it helps the rates in general, because now you're getting money to help pay for those capital projects that would not end up in the rates. It won't end up in the rates now because you're getting that external funding. I hate to raise your hopes too much on that, because of course the grant money is competitive, everybody wants it, and so anyway, but it does increase the likelihood when you've crossed that affordability threshold that you can get that money.
Because I mean, I look at retirement at some point, and you know, I know that I'll be on a fixed income. Looking at the 2018 rates projection, it's like I gotta think about that. You know, so it's not that far off.
I will say, to give you some hope, though, it, sometimes we sit there and we look and we say it's so astronomical. I recall before the water and sewer was taken over by the city, we looked at the Cagle project, and at one point we looked at it and said, well, it doesn't look very good. And then all of a sudden, we got a hold of a chance to get 1.5% money. And granted, we didn't take that opportunity because it just wasn't, it didn't work out. The city was taking over the water and sewer, and there was no guarantee the project would be done by the time the transfer took place, and we didn't get to take advantage of that 1.5% money. But you never know when that might fall in your lap again. So.
Okay, we'll have an answer in a few months.
DEQ has a bill for legislation.
Anything else that sticks out at you that or stands out that you, I have to tell you that I am impressed. Coming up to this, I was scared that we were going to have a monster here, and it was going to be a great deal of a challenge to present this to the paying public. But if you'd have been here for the 4 hours and got a lot more of the details, and even this right here, I think you can see that when you're talking about $6, that's not bad. I mean, granted, we've got the, you know, grandmas and those out there that are on fixed incomes and everything, and every $6 you have to pay out can be a challenge. But in the reality of it, I'm absolutely thrilled, and I would think the council is, of what we come up with.
Yeah.
Okay. If there's no more questions, I will close the public hearing and ask council for a discussion to start. So what we're dealing with right here is a motion at some point to direct staff to proceed.
Either with what's been proposed or any changes you would like to see us at least work toward, and then we can kind of incorporate it if there's a consensus on that.
Okay.
So we can, Jeremy's going to help drop the ordinances, working with them, because we're going to then change, there's a whole lot of stuff that needs to be changed because we adopted the district ordinances. So for how we collect late bills and, you know, how we do door hangers and you name it, will be all part of the changes, which are kind of outside his normal thing. So together, we'll have an ordinance and a resolution, or a couple ordinances, to approve in April. But the biggie, we've got to start drawing these up. So
okay, council, I would just start by asking if there's any objections to the proposal that's been presented to move forward on that.
Not for me.
Stu?
No, I'm impressed. You know, I was, like a few other folks have stated, I thought we'd be in here for, you know, a browbeating, but I'm pretty impressed with everything that's been presented, and I am all in favor of staff proceeding forward.
Greg?
Yeah, I'm the same mind. I mean, these numbers are, to some folks, it's going to be a stretch, but for the majority, I think it's going to be a relief to see that it's only going up, you know, that small of an amount, and worry about the big stuff later. Go ahead with what we're doing now. Okay, proceed.
I feel the same way. One of the things that had come to my mind a few weeks ago is the public that lives in Lapine was so worried that their bills were going to go sky high and they were not going to be able to afford water or sewer. This plan here has showed me that that is not the case, that it is going to be an easy pocketbook thing. And that's what I worry about, because I know that our city is not built of a lot of rich people. There's a lot of people that live in this city that struggle at the end of the month or the middle of the month. Mm-hmm. So I didn't want to put more burden upon them. And I see this as a good plan, and I hope they do too.
Mm-hmm. Then with that, council, I feel the same way. With that, I would entertain a motion to direct the staff to proceed with the way it is laid out at this time.
I so move.
Second.
Moved and seconded. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Let the record reflect that it's unanimous to move forward as presented this evening.
Well, thank you for everything, and thank you, John, and we'll move on to the next phase. Remember, just so next Tuesday night, we're going to meet, kind of have a priority setting, call it goal setting, I don't like that, but call it priority for the things we might be interested in the budget or things you're thinking about. Is that still okay for next Tuesday night at 6?
I thought it was in the afternoon.
Oh, it's it is the afternoon.
Yeah. Yes. And it's at the Crescent Creek.
Oh, that's right. That's at 2 o'clock. At Crescent Creek. And thank Dawn Greiner, who's been making calls and getting that set up for us. And they're going to go over and make sure that it works for all of you and the chairs and tables, because we don't know what is in there. So they're going to go over on Thursday, I think, and check that out. So we'll be at Crescent Creek. And that'll be good.
And of course, this is a public meeting, so you're all invited to come and listen to us try to make or put together ideas that are important to the city.
Yes. So it can only be there next week.
Kathy,
Greg, you told me you could be there. Kathy.
Stu, what about you? Are you available?
On a minute.
Karen?
He promised it would be after 2 o'clock.
Yep, we did it so she can just come right down the street on her way home.
That's the... I've got 2 o'clock.
Yeah, it's 2 to 4. It'll be like 2 to 5, or we can find out at 4, whatever, something like that. But we'll get done at 5, so you can all go home and have dinner.
A word from you, too.
And then you guys are heading, a couple of you are heading to Salem on Thursday, Friday.
Right.
For the city council day.
Wednesday, Thursday?
Whatever. Thursday.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
Okay.
Thank you.
Can I take a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
All those in favor?
Aye.
We're adjourned. And I thank you all for coming.